This podcast was brought to you by Spartan Sports.
This is The Running Game, a rugby podcast that covers the sport from the ground up. I'm Tim Gilbert and I'm joined by my co-host, former Wallaby, Matt Dunning. How was Easter, buddy?
Yeah, it was great. A little too many eggs, still eating a little bit too much. I'm only going one way, but I'm still a long way off where I was. But it was a great Easter, away with the family. A bit of golf too, so I can't complain at all. I've had the perfect Easter.
Oh, how good's that to get a game of golf when you're away with the family? That is a gold medal. Now, the Easter eggs, like the Matt Dunning I first met and knew many, many years ago wouldn't have cared about the quantity. What about the new you?
Well, it's interesting. So we got him on today. Phil Waugh always says this at dinners, that I'm the first professional athlete to lose weight, get fit, give up the grog after they retired. But, you know, I got down to a crazy weight of 86 kilos in about 8 months from 130. But, you know, I'm back tipping the ton now. So I'm a little bit more lifestyle Matt rather than obsessed fitness Matt. But, look, I think it's moderation for me, which I've never, ever been good with. And, you know, just get back onto a little bit of training and a little bit of good eating after Easter.
Yeah, that sounds like both of us. Well, you mentioned Phil Waugh. He's coming up on the show. What a player he was. He's on the board of the ARU. And we also talked to Adam Fryer, who's running the LA franchise in the new American League. This is The Running Game. Well, Matt, the Queensland Reds, Thorne has got them working, hasn't he? Really playing some good footy.
Yeah, no, really impressed with Queensland. Obviously, Queensland, the Brumbies are the benchmark of the Super Rugby Australia. And I think the Reds are my favourite team from that point of view of obviously always a Waratah fan, but the Reds are my favourite. Just what he's created there, Brad Thorne. Like, he didn't worry about egos early and he picked players and let players go that weren't buying into what he wanted to do. And he's seeing the rewards now, and he's nurtured some really good young talent. You know, Tupu Taniela, the tight end prop, is just sensational. You know, up there in the leading try scorers, and his hooker Murphy is also a leading try scorer. But they're just sensational. I've really enjoyed watching the brand of footy they've played. And I guess, you know, I saw an interview with Brad Thorne last week, and he was almost like the accidental coach. He didn't know what he was going to do, and he got into coaching, and he didn't know if it was for him. And I tell you what, the one thing about coaching young men is passing on experiences. You're not telling people what to do or how to do it if you haven't done it yourself. And there's nothing that Brad Thorne hasn't done in the game of football. So everything that he brings to the boys is from an experience that he's had. He's won every trophy. He's won, you know, Heineken Cups, World Cups, Rugby League, Winfield Cups. He's won Japanese Cups. He's won everything that Brad Thorne's gone in, he has won. So that kind of experience and that kind of, I guess, mojo bringing into that young group of men is just rubbing off. And, you know, watching them play against Melbourne last week was just refreshing. They love playing together. You can see that they spend a lot of time together. They don't mind getting into each other and ribbing each other. And they work for each other. And they've got a good mix. You know, James O'Connor, who is, you know, has copped a lot of flack over the years for the way he's played and the way he's conducted himself, has come into this Reds environment and everyone's just singing his praises. And if a guy like Brad Thorne is a massive fan of James O'Connor, you know he's doing the right things, because he won't accept anyone putting eye before a team. You know, it's just good to see it. And it's great to see that there's a lot of young talent there that's come out of Queensland. They're fostering it. And they've also, what they've been able to do is they've also been able to nurture depth. You know, they've got a good depth on the bench in their squad. They've rotated it. They're giving players a run and giving them access to game time. And you just see how it's breeding a great success. And I'm just looking forward to watch them play this week against a great Brumby side. You know, it's the two teams are the standout. They're 2 points between them in one match that the Reds beat Canberra in Canberra, the Brumbies in Canberra. You know, and this week's going to be a cracker. It's going to be great to see how these two teams line up each other in Queensland, each other. And then, more importantly, I'm looking forward to see how they line up against the New Zealand teams in the back half of this year.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And look, we've got a couple of great guests on the show today, two former Wallabies. The first of those is Phil Waugh. That's coming up next on The Running Game. A real treat for The Running Game. 79 tests for the Wallabies, a career, an extraordinary career at every single level. Phil Waugh, how are you?
Very well. Good to be joining you.
So, Waugh, most importantly, you're between jobs at the moment. I want to know, What's harder, being a high-powered banking executive or looking after toddlers?
I think you know the answer to that, Matt.
I spent
a couple of weeks away with the 3 and the 1-year-old, and I'm actually up for any voluntary work between now and when I start the next job, which I thought this timing's actually not ideal because it's kids' sleep time, so probably better to do it when they're awake and I can escape a little bit.
Oh, it's hard. It's harder than any job you do, isn't it, looking after them? Well, since we're getting a bit of the softer stuff out of the way early, what was it like playing with this bloke?
It was always entertaining. I mean, I had the delight of playing with Matt in 1996. I think was the first time we played together, played rugby together. He'll always tell you the story about how he stumped me down leg side when I was playing. We were playing Green Shield cricket against each other, and he still says that I couldn't have been out because he took the bails off so quickly I didn't have time to lift my back foot, which I thought was very true. But we played a lot of football together, and always good fun, as much fun off the field as on the field, and a very enjoyable career, in parallel a lot of the way through our careers. We followed each other through, whether it was at state level or through to the Wallabies, and always great fun.
A lot of good times. There's some rocky roads there, but we're great mates still today. Isn't that right, Phil?
It was always good entertainment for anyone reading the newspapers throughout your career, Matt. So that was just as entertaining for us as it was for the people reading the newspaper.
Mate, you're just lucky there was no iPhones or Facebook back then.
I think we're all pretty lucky with that.
Now, Phil, talking about the modern game, you're on the board of Rugby Australia, the ARU. What do you make of the game in the Southern Hemisphere, particularly in Australia right at the moment?
Yeah, look, I think world sports changed considerably since COVID hit at the start of last year. Even 2019 Rugby World Cup, South Africa beating England in the final. So you go through the history of Rugby World Cups and who's won Rugby World Cups, and it's always been the Southern Hemisphere team, other than in 2003, which we try and forget, don't we, Matt? But obviously England winning that one. So I think the strength of the game at an international level is reasonably strong. We've obviously got our own challenges around the provincial level and Super Rugby and where that fits into the scheduling, into the calendar, and also when you think about players and where that fits into against the top 14 in France or UK Premiership and probably the most competitive market for Australian players is up into Japan. So there's certainly a lot of challenges, but trying to, I guess, simplify the model and create as much opportunity and interest in the game in Australia as we possibly can.
So, Phil, like in 2006, average crowd at Super Rugby and Test Rugby were through the roof, over 30,000 to the Waratahs, 2006 average crowd. Wallabies attendance was fantastic. We know rugby's not in the space we wanted to be in Australia at the moment. Where do you see the fix, the long-term solution? Is there anything we can do differently or we are doing differently that can really get our game back in Australia where we'd love to see it again?
Yeah, it's a pretty big question, that one, Matt. I think you're right. If you go back to 2006, I think the average crowd, as you said, was high 30s at Sydney Football Stadium. Decreased since then in Super Rugby. And look, I'm a big believer in quality over quantity, and I think we've seen it in a number of sports where sports have gone for quantity and number of games rather than actually having the best possible product and having less of them. And so I think that there's very much an argument for that. I think then, it's very much around the pathways. How do you become a Wallaby from a young boy down to the local community club? And I think that over the years we've lost that clarity of pathway. So I think that's a big part of it. And then a big one for me is, and certainly one which I'm quite strongly opinionated on, is I think we we need to coexist with other sports, and so coexist with rugby league, coexist with AFL, and I think the proposition of rugby union as a global game is far more compelling than our competitors. And so how do we get more boys and girls playing rugby, even if they are playing AFL or rugby league or soccer or any other sport? And so so very much around participation. You talk about eyeballs and interest, and the challenge that we have in Southern Hemisphere. If you look at Northern Hemisphere, I mean, the game's probably as strong as it's ever been. And as I said, globally at an international level, we compete reasonably well, but you still got to have participation to ensure that the funnel is full for opportunity down the track. And so I'm not sure if I've really answered your question there, Matt, but I think a lot of it is around actually how do we coexist? How do we ensure that there's a clear pathway to become a Wallaby? How do we make it a premium brand and product? And that will then drive participation. So I think there's a lot to it. It's not an easy and simple fix, but I do feel like rather than challenging or fighting each other amongst the game, it's about actually how do we all work together to see the game prosper in our local market.
As someone who observes it, as a father that's got boys that play rugby, I can really see what you're saying about that community level and about that grassroots level. And that's probably somewhere that it really needs to be marketed as a point of difference. Of course, it's a global game, but it offers something which a lot of other sports don't. It offers a sense of belonging, rugby union. And I see it in the club that my boys play in that a lot of other sports don't.
Yeah, I think that's right, Tim. And I think that's when, when I talk through the pathways, I grew up playing for Narrabeen Tigers, ball boy for Warringah, and then obviously played at Sydney Uni, but it was a very clear pathway when I was ball boying for Warringah. You play for Warringah, you get picked for New South Wales, and then you get picked for the Wallabies if you're good enough. And so it was a very clear pathway. But what the club was at Warringah and is all around the country for rugby is it's a sense of belonging, as you rightly called out, and it's a place for the community to meet and socialise in. And I think that's really important, which is why it needs to be accessible for everyone. It needs to link and touch in with the local community. And I think that's, once that occurs, and one of the great growth rates that we have in our game is the participation of females as well. And so how do you create an environment at your local community rugby club whereby it's the right place and a safe place for boys and girls and all of the family? And I think that there's a number of clubs that have done that really well, and we need to support those that are struggling as well. But I think it's certainly a place of belonging and a sense of belonging. And I think that we really need to harness that. You rightly call out then, what's the next pathway or next step up, what we call, I guess, tier two, when you think about the provincial game, where does the club game and community game fit in with the provincial game, which then filters up into the international game, which is a real challenge.
I definitely hear what you're saying, Phil, and totally agree. I think it's the rugby community coming together and working together. I think in the past, I don't know about now so much, but definitely in the past, it's always been a bit of us versus them. Do you think that's starting to change? Are the junior clubs and the bigger bodies starting to work together rather than a little bit of us and them mentality?
Oh, well, I think we have to. I think, in a lot of ways, there's been this great divide between the amateur game and the professional game. And so you've actually ended up with, people who love rugby choosing between their local club and whether they'll go to a Waratahs game or a Reds game or a professional game. And so, certainly in the early years of professionalism, it was I'm going to go to my local rugby club and play or watch the local club, and then I'm going to go out and watch the Waratahs play or the Reds play or the Brumbies play. And it was very much I'm going to do both. And I think over the last few years, we've certainly seen a divide and the competition between the amateur game and the professional game. And what we need to do is actually bring that feeling of belonging and ownership of the provincial teams that comes through the club system. And so, certainly, I guess, building those bridges and shortening the gap between the amateur game and the professional game is one of our biggest challenges. But, with the leadership, at board levels through to club levels, I think there's that recognition that that's what we need to do. And, you know, it's not a quick fix or an easy fix, but I do think that, the recognition of that's, the first step.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to leave this to last because it no doubt a sore point with both of you guys who bled for the jersey. But the Waratahs, it's a mess at the minute.
Yeah, look, it's certainly challenged. I think if you look at their roster and I guess the strategy that right through from board and chair right through to the selectors and the coaches around picking youth and not spending to the budget. There's some great young kids there. I think we saw that. I thought we saw a real turnaround on Friday night. To be fair, I thought one of the greatest things I think about Will Harrison missing that kick was the disappointment after he missed that kick, and I think we've seen too frequently players lose games or lose big moments, and then the next frame you'll see them laughing with the opponents. And I thought we saw a real care for the jersey and the performance and the result on Friday night, which I think is a bit different to what we've seen over the last couple of years. So, look, it's not going to be, a quick turnaround for the Waratahs, but I do think there's some really good young talent there, and it's just a matter of making sure that we've got the appropriate coaching and support for them off the field so they can actually bring so much energy and youth on the field. So, whilst it's been a really disappointing, I think, probably 18 months and certainly the start of the Super Rugby AU, what we saw on Friday night for me was probably a light that we hadn't seen for some time. So, as Matt knows and Tim, I'm always very optimistic, but I do think there's some really good talent coming through, and it's just a matter then around how do you build a culture around the coaching and the environment that people want to be in.
And a big positive, obviously, for the Waratahs, you put on your other hat, is that brand new stadium that I drove past the other day. It looked like it's gone up in 2 seconds. It looked like it took a while to start, but now it's just flown up. That looks pretty magnificent. Obviously, you're on the board of the trust. So, how's that coming along? Because it looks pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great asset for New South Wales. I think if you go around to all the other states around Australia, Perth has got one of the world's best stadiums. Adelaide, obviously, Melbourne. We know what they do, and then Suncorp in Queensland. Our real competition to get big events in Sydney has been around our ability to host in venues that compete with those other ones that I just mentioned. And I think this stadium is going to be world-class. And another piece, I think, which we've seen over COVID is obviously, we talk about 75,000 people going to a game. I think that, it brought, we talked a bit before about audiences at the stadium. I think broadcasting's made a big difference. So how do you make it a first-class experience going to a live event? And I think that, that venue holding 43,000 to 45,000 people right in the heart of Sydney, close to Paddington, close to Surrey Hills, close to the eastern suburbs, easy to get to public transport. I think it's going to be a world-class stadium in the centre of one of the world's best cities.
Yeah, it's going to be an absolute cracker. Phil, thanks so much for coming on episode 2 of The Running Game. We'd love to get you back on soon.
Thank you very much for having me, and I'd love to be involved. So all the best.
Coming up on The Running Game, we head to the US and talk to Adam Fryer. This is The Running Game, and look, this next guest of ours has worked in many capacities in and around the game. He's probably got one of his greatest tasks of all time, being the head of the LA Guillotinis, which is part of course, a large competition in the United States. It's very early doors. Adam Fryer, how are you?
We'll have to work on that name pronunciation there, Tim. It's Guillotinis.
Oh, Guillotinis. We went through it about 8 times. I still got it wrong. And my name is Gilbert. How bad am I going?
Oh, that's good. No, you could be our season ticket holder. No, look, it is, it's a challenge. It's been enjoyable in the sense that I love my craft. I love the sport. And I've always wanted to get over in America and work within rugby. And, mate, you can't find a tougher job as promoting and growing a new sport in the United States. That is rugby in the COVID capital of the world during a pandemic. It's just been, one massive headache. But we've finally got there. We played our last 2 games without any hitches. Our COVID cases have been minimal. And we've got fans in the stands, hopefully with cans in their hands. In about 3 weeks' time. So that's our calling. That's our catch cry. That's what we're saying to market, is that we want fans in the stands with cans in their hands. And that's, we're on task for that. Anaheim had their fans in the grounds last week. Dodgers are promoting tickets, so it's just all about getting people in the stands and appreciating sports again, because LA's had a really tough task with COVID. It's been a COVID capital of the world, but now it's certainly coming through that in California.
Hass, how are you finding the uptake of rugby union in America? Like, obviously, for years, people are saying there has to be a competition in North America. It has to happen, but no one's been able to do it before for whatever reasons. How's it being taken by the locals? And, you know, are you finding it's getting to the masses?
Look, I think it is going well, Matt. And the thing about it is it people need to be patient. And I think what's happened in its first two times where it's tried to come in and create a professional league really quickly, it's had its targets too high too early. This is the ownership group, and the different dynamic here is it's run by its owners and it employs a commission. So, the group of owners have been really patient in its growth. There's definitely an appetite for rugby. Like, there's make no question about it. It's just it needs to be a sustainable model, and there's no broadcast revenue, so you need to do things differently. Hence why the ownership group that I am managed by is very big on, you know, naming a team after a cocktail and, you know, looking at different ways to promote the sport. And, it is taking off. Like, make no question. Like, it's going to get even bigger, but you've got to be patient. And you're looking at some of the players that are coming across. It's got a lot of characteristics to what Japan had, say, 15, 20 years ago. And even now, they're only just starting to see success. That's Japanese rugby, where you would go to Japan at the back end of your career to earn a bit of money and have a bit of fun. Now, the money's not there in the MLR, but we're getting a lot of players coming across for the experience. And I think what you've seen with Japan around competition is now sustainable. They've had a World Cup. They've got a team that's somewhat successful in the Cherry Blossoms. I think that's the formula. That's what you need to replicate now when you look at the MLR. So a World Cup is definitely on the horizon. That will have a huge bearing on the sport here in the professional league. And the one thing Americans love is gold medals. So you marry up a sevens gold medal with that is an Olympic sport, with a pro league that has a World Cup. They're the sorts of things and blocks you've got to have along the way, and you underpin it with a pro league. It's 5 years' time, it'll be in a really good place.
Well, you've got some big names at your club, Andy, in the league already when you're talking Southern Hemisphere rugby.
Yeah, absolutely. But look, Matt Giddo's going to be celebrating his 38th birthday pretty soon. Coopy's 37. They're at the back end of their careers, but what they've been offering off the field, like we've got players like Ryan James, 21-year-old winger who's never been to college but just learning so much from him. Christian Rodriguez, who's a Hispanic number nine, was even telling me the other day, who's sort of a rookie playing inside Matt Giddo, who loves the sport. I think their worth is in different areas. They're marketable, make no question, but, you know, and I'm not saying that they're playing poorly. Gits has been outstanding, but they're just great leaders and they do so much on the off field. And they're over here for different reasons. Like they're at the end of their careers. They want to come for the experience with their families. And they've got a wine business they're heavily invested in. So they've got different energy pointed, but gee whiz, they're doing a good job. And, you know, a lot of the other clubs are starting to recruit these marquee players, but they're not coming over for the money. And I think that's the big thing for us and for a lot of the ownership groups around the league. It's about people finishing their careers in the right way. And, yeah, our players, all of our players, not just some of our stars, have just been exceptional in what they're delivering more to this next generation of Eagles. And I say that to everyone is that, you know, my goal is not to promote, you know, super rugby players and getting him into the MLR. I'm here to grow Eagles. And Gits is going to have a huge job, but not on this club in the next sort of 6 months and the end of his season is for years to come. I'd love to keep him for a little longer, that's for sure.
So, Hass, obviously working for the great Adam Gilchrist, not the cricketer people would know, the mastermind behind F45. I played a lot of rugby with Adam, with Gilly, in junior football. Loves his rugby more than anyone else. I imagine he had something to do with the name of the team, because I imagine he wouldn't mind a few of those cocktails.
No, you're right. But look, I would say in any instance, I think the management team that we've got here have been, yeah, we've got a great team and a great staff. So look, Gilly's going to try things differently, and hence that was my attraction to the role, is that everyone in Australian rugby will say that we need to change and we need to evolve, and this is what AFL's doing. Look at the NFL's doing, but it was a sport that struggled to change. But what we're seeing this year with innovation around Stan Sport, a lot of their marketing that they're doing, and Super Rugby AU, it's starting to show that change. But what Adam's done, he's redefined the gym industry by, you know, plasmas and modulized training when it comes to personal training and to fitness, and has really, he's changed the way you train for years to come. Now, some of the thinking that he has around the rugby and our sport, we're all rugby people on this call, is that you're going to start seeing some wild ideas, and I think that's what the sport needs. And, you know, naming it after a cocktail, if I'd actually tell people when, you know, why you called the Guiltinis, it's all, there's Red Bull Racing and there's kids in the stands with flags with, you know, energy drink on it, and that seems to do pretty well. Suntory, who's the most powerful rugby club in Japan, and argue one of probably one of the strongest in the world, is a whiskey and a scotch who plays against a tractor and an internet company. So I think the way you can bring in brands into sport is actually quite, it's innovative for sure. But I think what we'll be known for, not for the name of our team, but what we'll do in the stands. And I think that's what's going to be powerful about him and Adam, and he wants to take risks, and not even risk. He's always got the sport at the heart of all of his ideas. And rugby, yeah, as what everyone keeps telling me, is like, well, you're named after a cocktail, and I'll explain it to them. And they say, I get it. But I think you both on the call would appreciate and understand is that rugby is a sport that is desperate to change, but sometimes struggles to. And starting to see some of those fruits in Australian rugby this year, it's been fantastic to see the way they've innovated and gone into OTT and the risk they've taken there. It's going to pay off. But yeah, we're going to do some crazy stuff here at the Guiltinis, no doubt about it. But it's all dedicated to the fans.
It's great listening to you, and it's music to the ears, because it sounds very similar to what our core values as we start to develop this podcast. We're only in our second episode, but the running game, we'd love to follow the fortunes of the Guiltinis and all the innovation that's going on in the United States. Adam, thank God we're seeing some green shoots. I know your family's back here. It has been a difficult time on a personal level as well, but we wish you all the very best, and let's talk real soon.
I'd appreciate that, Tim. And just one thing, just please stop putting Duro Sen on your Sky News. It's just his ego on his Instagram account.
He's the tech king.
Duro Sen, one of the great tourists, Adam.
Thanks, Matty. Thanks, Tim. I'm happy to come on and spread the good word. That is the MLR and your favourite cocktail and rugby team. That is the Guiltinis. But I appreciate your support. Cheers.
Thanks, Ass.
That's it for The Running Game this week. We'll be with you every week with more rugby chat and great interviews. Follow us on your favourite podcast app so you don't miss it. A big thank you goes out to our guests, Adam Fryer, and of course, Phil Waugh, our mighty sponsor, Spartan Sports. That was a lot of fun, Matty.
A lot of fun. Great to speak to a couple of old mates. Obviously not seeing a lot of Adam these days, but good to hear from him.
And a guy that played pretty decent schoolboy rugby himself all those years ago, our producer, Dan McHugh. See you next week.